Hello and welcome to this week's Jewish Life. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. First, from the JCC calendar. Bright Darkness, Ann Schlachter Design, May 9th to June 28th. Artist Talk and Reception on May 9th at 7 p.m. Open to the public. Israeli-American artist Ann Schlachter Dagan's unique sensitivity to light and color blindness unveils a mesmerizing interplay of shadows, inviting you to explore the profound beauty that emerges when light becomes someone's darkness. Marcel Marceau, A Silent Hero, a performance by the Latin Ballet of Virginia, May 2nd, 7 p.m. The Latin Ballet brings to life the story Marcel Marceau, a French actor who used his art of mime to save Jewish children during the Holocaust. $30 members, $36 non-members. Our next articles are from MiriamsCup.com. Miriam's Cup is a contemporary ritual for the Passover Seder. Incorporating Miriam's Cup in your family Seder honors the role of Miriam the prophetess in the Exodus, as well as the important contributions of Jewish women throughout the ages in shaping Jewish history and traditions. History of Miriam's Cup. Like most religions, Judaism developed within a patriarchal society. Men recorded and interpreted religious law and wrote their traditional prayers and rituals. Jewish women in the 20th century, who strive for gender equality in the secular world, faced a dilemma in reconciling their feminist outlooks with Jewish practice. How could they forge a Jewish religious identity consistent with contemporary values and gender equality? The Passover Exodus story of oppression and liberation echoed women's struggles. Like the Israelites, women wanted to step outside familiar subservient roles in society and attempt a riskier life of independence and responsibility. Thus, Passover became the ideal holiday to highlight past and present concerns about the inclusion and equality of women in Jewish traditions and community. The first feminist Seder was organized by Esther Broner, Marcia Friedman, and Nomi Nimrod in Haifa in 1975. Inspired by this experience, Ms. Broner and Ms. Nimrod wrote The Women's Haggadah, first used in New York and Haifa in 1976. Subsequently, women throughout the United States organized seders, often composing their own texts. New Haggadah have evolved from these feminist seders, emphasizing the independence and strength of women and teaching about the unsung heroines of the biblical and rabbinic period. Soon to follow were changes in prayer book translations to be more gender inclusive, as well as full participation of women in prayer services and Jewish rituals. Women also created new rituals. In Philadelphia in 1978, a group of women celebrated Sukkot and decided to invite biblical women as guests into their sukkah. The first guest was Miriam the prophetess. After the women shared what they could learn from Miriam, they all drank a glass of water in honor of Miriam. Impressed by her experience, Penina Adelman created a Rosh Chodesh ritual honoring Miriam in her book, Miriam's Well, Rituals for Jewish Women Around the Year, 1990. In Boston in 1989, A group of women met monthly to celebrate Rosh Chodesh. One month, Joyce Rosen led the others in a meditation of renewal from Mayim Chayim, the living waters of Miriam's well. Miriam's well is a magic well of water given to the Israelites in the desert that traveled with them in their exodus from Egypt. It may have had magic curative properties, as well as served as an important water supply in the desert. It dried up upon Miriam's death. The legend of Miriam's well provided a powerful metaphor for the role of Jewish women in sustaining the Jewish people, particularly in times of adversity. Stephanie Lou Rattati, a member of the Boston Rosh Chodesh group, found the ritual so powerful that she placed a goblet of water in the middle of her Shabbat table and called it Kos Miriam. Each family member drank from the goblet as part of a new Shabbat ritual. Subsequently, the Boston Rosh Chodesh group made drinking from Miriam's cup a part of their monthly meetings. It was a natural progression to use Kos Miriam as part of the Passover Seder, due to Miriam's central role in the Exodus story. In 1992, Lilith magazine commissioned potter Nissan Gram Mach to create a unique ritual object to serve as a Miriam's cup. The cup unfolds Miriam's story as it rotates, including symbols for water and Miriam's well, as well as notes sparkling through Miriam's tambourine. The magazine unveiled the first Miriam's Cup, along with the Miriam's Cup Passover ritual, written by Stephanie Lou Rattari, Mattia Angelo, and Jeanette Birkenfield. Blessings from this ritual encircle the stem and rim of the cup. Rabbi Susan Schnoor wrote an accompanying article, tracing the history of Miriam from the Bible and rabbinic commentaries to current feminist scholarship. Year 2000 was the year of Miriam's cup. Many newspaper articles appeared about the new ritual of placing Miriam's cup on the Seder table. Needless to say, all the Judaica stores were eager to supply Miriam's cups as a new Jewish ritual object. Miriam's cup is filled with water rather than wine, to symbolize Miriam's miraculous well. Typically, all of the women at the Seder table fill the cup with water from their own glasses to signify the pivotal collective role of women for Jewish continuity. Various readings or prayers can be associated with Miriam's cup, often emphasizing the importance of nurturing and encouragement along our life's journey. Miriam's cup ritual. Filling Miriam's cup follows the second cup of wine before washing the hands. Raise the empty goblet and say, Miriam's cup is filled with water rather than wine. I invite women of all generations at our Seder table to fill Miriam's cup with water from their own glasses. Pass Miriam's cup around the tables. Explain the significance of filling Miriam's cup with water. A midrash teaches us that a miraculous well accompanied the Hebrews throughout their journey in the desert, given by God because of the merit of Miriam, the prophetess. Miriam's optimism and faith also was a spiritual oasis, giving the Hebrews the confidence to overcome the hardships of the Exodus. Like Miriam, Jewish women in all generations have been essential for the continuity of our people. As keepers of traditions in the home, women pass down songs and stories, rituals and recipes from mother to daughter, from generation to generation. Let us each fill the cup of Miriam with water from our own glasses, so that our daughters may continue to draw from the strength and wisdom of our heritage. When Miriam's cup is filled, raise the goblet and say, from Rabbi Susan Schnoor, Yehi ratzon milfanecha Adonoi Eloheinu Velohei Avotenu Borei Hayolam Shetisreinu Ukamenu Bamidbar Chayenu Imayim Chayim Betiten Lanu et Chazuk Vechamocha Ladot Shenischat Gulatenu Nimtsa Baderech Chayim Lorak Besof Haderet. You abound in blessings, God, Creator of the universe, who sustains us with living water. May we, like the children of Israel leaving Egypt, be guarded and nurtured and kept alive in the wilderness. And may you give us wisdom to understand that the journey itself holds a promise of redemption. Amen. Next, tell the story of a Jewish woman you admire. Begin by saying, each Passover, we dedicate Miriam's cup to a Jewish woman who has made important contributions in achieving equality and freedom for others. This year, we honor. After the rituals for the prophet Elijah, lift Miriam's cup and say, Miriam's life is a contrast to the life of Elijah. Elijah was a hermit who spent part of his life alone in the desert. He was a visionary and prophet, often very critical of the Jewish people and focused on the world to come. On the other hand, Miriam lived among her people in the desert, constantly encouraging them throughout their long journey. Therefore, Elijah's cup is a symbol of future messianic redemption, while Miriam's cup is a symbol of hope and renewal in the present life. We must achieve balance in our own lives, not only preparing our souls for redemption, but rejuvenating our souls in the present. Thus, we need both Elijah's cup and Miriam's cup at our Seder table. Overview: Miriam in the Tanakh or Hebrew Bible. Miriam the prophetess appears in these biblical passages. Miriam saves Moses, Exodus 2:1-10. Miriam's mother, Jochebed, placed Moses in a basket on the riverbed to save him from Pharaoh's decree to cast all newborn Hebrew boys into the Nile. The unnamed sister of Moses, presumably Miriam, hides by the riverbank to watch over the baby and helps deliver him to Pharaoh's daughter. Miriam arranges for Jochebed to nurse the baby. Miriam's Song of the Sea, Exodus 15:20-21. Called the prophet Miriam, Aaron's sister, Miriam leads Hebrew women in celebratory singing and dancing after the Israelites' deliverance from the Egyptians. Miriam is exiled, Numbers 12:1-16. Miriam and Aaron speak out against Moses in the matter of the Cushite woman and challenge his prophetic authority. Only Miriam is punished, stricken with a skin disease. Aaron pleads with Moses on her behalf, and Moses pleads with God. God responds by confining her outside the camp for 7 days. The people wait to continue their journey until Miriam returns. Miriam's Well, Numbers 20:1-2. Miriam disappears from the narrative until a brief announcement of her death and burial at Kadesh. After her death, the Israelites suffer from a lack of water. Miriam's Leadership, Micah 6:4. Miriam's status as a leader, along with her brothers, Moses and Aaron, is affirmed. Now we look at some women who have been honorees through the years from miriamscup.com. 1998, Letty Coton Pogrebin. Letty Coton Pogrebin is an important early leader in the women's movement who combined her feminist ideas with Jewish values. Ms. Pogrebin was born in 1939 in Queens, New York. She was raised in an observant Jewish home and loved to study Torah and Talmud diligently with her father, even beyond her bat mitzvah. However, when Letty was 15 years old, a sad event happened that changed her relationship to Judaism for a long time. Letty's mother died of cancer in 1955. When the Kaddish Minyan occurred in her home, there were only 9 men present. Letty begged her father to be counted in the Minyan, but he refused, calling the synagogue to ask for a 10th man. Letty turned her back on Judaism and did not become observant for 15 more years, until she felt that Judaism had ended the practice of excluding women. It took until the 1980s before either the conservative movement would count women in a minyan or allow women cantors to chant from the pulpit, and until even 1985, when the conservative movement would ordain the first woman rabbi. Letty Cotton Pogrebin was a writer and strong advocate for women's rights in the early stages of feminism in the early 1970s. She co-founded Ms. Magazine and the National Women's Political Caucus. She has written 9 books, including the memoir Getting Over Growing Older, a book on time and aging, and more recently, her first novel, 3 Daughters. But Letty is a true Renaissance woman, enjoying both feminist and feminine pastimes. She has been married for over 30 years, raised 3 children, and loves to needlepoint, cook, and entertain. She is equally comfortable in writing articles for Ms. Magazine or the Ladies' Home Journal. Letty had the courage to be both a strong feminist and a strong observant Jewish woman, at a time when most Jewish women in the feminist movement denied their heritage. In 1975, at the United Nations Conference on Women, the women's movement passed a platform declaring that Zionism is racism, and Letty challenged the anti-Israeli prejudice and anti-Semitism in the women's movement by writing articles about it in Ms. and other publications. In 1991, she expressed her fused Jewish feminist identity by writing the book, Deborah, Golder, and Me, Being Female and Jewish in America. With her Jewish women friends, she began to create Jewish rituals around life cycle events meaningful to women. So this year, 1998, we dedicate Miriam's Cup to Letty Cotton Pogrebin. A reconciliation of feminism and Judaism was important to many Jewish women who were having doubts about their religious traditions. 1999, Henrietta Szold. This Passover, I would like to tell you the story of Henrietta Szold, a woman who dedicated her life to Jewish education, social action, and Zionism. Henrietta Szold was born in Baltimore during the outbreak of the Civil War in 1860. She was the oldest child of liberal Rabbi Benjamin Szold and Sophie Schrar Szold, who had immigrated to Baltimore from Central Europe. She was a brilliant student at the top of her class at Western Female High School, but she learned even more from her father at home and was fluent in German, Hebrew, and French when she graduated high school. Women didn't attend college in the 1800s, so Szold began her first career as a teacher right out of high school. She taught French, German, and algebra at Mrs. Adams' English and French School for Girls and Jewish Studies at the school and her father's congregation, Oheb Shalom. In the 1880s, waves of Jewish immigration from Eastern Europe came to Baltimore, and she assisted the immigrants in night school, teaching them English and civics. She went back to school herself a few years later, enrolling in the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York. As a woman, she was required to sign an understanding that she did not aspire to be a rabbi. She ended up teaching English to many of the seminary instructors themselves, who were recent immigrant Jewish scholars from Europe. While a teacher, Henrietta Zold also had a second career as a writer and editor. She began writing for Jewish journals on a wide variety of issues of concern to the American Jewish community. In 1888, when she was 28 years old, she was invited to be one of 9 members, the only female, of the Publications Committee of the New Jewish Publication Society. 4 years later, she was the first executive secretary of the JPS, holding this job until she was aged 56 in 1916. She translated, edited, and indexed many important Jewish works during this time. Zold's third and most illustrious career was as an important leader in the Jewish Zionist movement. She was made a member of the Federation of American Zionist Executive Committee, the only woman member. However, she was frustrated by the idealistic, somewhat romantic Zionistic aspirations of this male-dominated organization. Zold had been a member of a small women's gathering called the Hadassah Study Circle in New York for many years. On Purim Day, 1912, Zold and a group of these women officially founded Hadassah, Hebrew for Esther, the heroine of Purim, and she was elected president. Some thought this new society would be a ladies' auxiliary for the FAS, but Zold envisioned an independent social service organization. In contrast to the amateurish efforts of the Federation of American Zionists, Zold's Hadassah was practical and businesslike, and soon became a major political force in the American and World Zionist movements. Hadassah organized and funded the American Zionist Medical Union, which reformed medical care in Palestine, resulting in the establishment of a nursing school, dental school, medical school, clinics, and hospitals. Israel slowly began to develop a standard of medicine equal to that of wealthy Western nations. In 1920, at the age of 60, Zold herself moved to Israel to take charge of the Hadassah Medical Organization, HMO. However, she had problems in directing the unit. The Eastern Europeans resented her as an outsider, both as a woman as an American. In 1925, she relinquished the position and in subsequent years played a supporting but still significant role in the affairs of the organization. Zold then turned her attention to the need for social services in Israel. With aid from wealthy American friends, she established modern social service agencies in most major cities in Israel. She opened the country's first school of social work, which later became the School of Social Work of the Hebrew University. Some of her most notable and important work occurred in the 1930s when she was over 70 years old. Though she never had any children of her own, she became the mother of many children. In 1933, she became director of Youth Aliyah, a worldwide movement to rescue young victims of Nazism and rehabilitate them in Israel. Even when the dangers of World War II made many Americans in Palestine return home, Henrietta Zold refused to leave her community. While her initial intent in going to Palestine in 1920 had been to bring Americanism to Palestine, she evolved into an ambassador for Zionism. She was the interpreter who taught Americans about what was happening in Palestine and galvanized financial and political support for a new Jewish homeland. She died in Jerusalem at age 85 in the modern medical center built by Hadassah. 2001. Ruth Gruber. Passover is an appropriate holiday to honor Ruth Gruber, a woman who dedicated her life to rescuing Jews from oppression. Ruth was born in 1911 in Brooklyn, New York, one of five children of Russian Jewish immigrant parents David and Gussie Gruber. She was a brilliant scholar, entering college at the age of 15 and becoming the youngest person in the world to attain a PhD at age 20. At the brink of World War II, Ruth Gruber started traveling alone around the world, a remarkable feat for a 19-year-old single woman in the 1930s. She won a scholarship for graduate study in Germany and experienced firsthand the rising anti-Semitism there as Hitler came to power. Returning home, she began a career as a journalist, writing for the New York Times and the New York Herald Tribune. In 1935, she won a Guggenheim Foundation Fellowship to study women under fascism, communism, and democracy. She became the first foreign correspondent, male or female, allowed to fly into Siberia. She interviewed pioneers and prisoners in Stalin's Soviet Gulag, many of them Jews, and wrote about her experiences in a book entitled I Went to the Soviet Arctic. In 1941, Secretary of the Interior Harold I. Ickes appointed Ruth Gruber as his special assistant. Her first assignment was to make a social and economic study of Alaska to open it for homesteaders and returning veterans, and she covered the territory by plane, truck, and dog sled for 18 months. Next came a secret mission that was her most important life task. Although the U.S. Congress refused to lift the quota on Jewish immigration from Eastern Europe, President Roosevelt, as a symbolic gesture, issued an executive order to permit 1,000 Jewish refugees from Naples, Italy, to visit America as guests of the president. They were to be lodged in an army training base near Oswego, New York. Ruth Gruber secretly met and escorted the refugees on their journey to the United States. She was given an honorary rank of general because if the Nazis were to capture her as a civilian, they would kill her as a spy. But as a general, at least the Nazis would have to feed and shelter her as a prisoner of war. Throughout the long and treacherous voyage across the Atlantic, Ruth recorded the refugees' survival stories. Upon arrival in the United States, they were held for 18 months at the Army base, and Gruber fought on their behalf until they finally were granted U.S. citizenship. Gruber's book about the experience, Haven, The Unknown Story of 1,000 World War II Refugees, became a musical play in 1993 and a CBS television miniseries in 2001. We will continue this article next week. That's all for this week's Jewish Life. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.